Welcome into another edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. Dan is on the line, as is the legend, Brian Snow. It's been a little bit since we talked, guys. There's been a lot of basketball played. The Musketeers are now 9-7 overall, 1-2 in the Big East Conference, and I think we just need to start here. Before the season, last time we talked, we were talking about how we thought this team would do, predicting the record, talking about potential tournament resumes, and they've underperformed to what our expectations were, obviously. So let's start with that. Brian, we'll go to you first. Why has this team failed to meet the expectations you had, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a few things. The biggest thing to me is I thought Kyle Castlin would be able to give them more. You're looking at a kid in Kyle Castlin who was a solid player coming in, and you thought maybe he could provide a solid role, maybe like an Andre Walker type of role or something like that, Malcolm Bernard, and he hasn't been close to that. Let's just be honest. I don't think he has a basket in Big East play. He's getting wide open shot after wide open shot and not making any of them. And when you have a senior who, granted, he hasn't been with your program, but you're expecting him to be a role guy and your fifth best player, and he just can't bring that to you. And not only can he not bring that to you, but he's giving you nothing. It's hard. And that would be the biggest thing from my perspective. And then Quentin Gooden has taken a step back. There's no way to say it any other way. He's been extremely lackadaisical with the ball. His decision-making has been worse than it's ever been at any point in time in his career, including as a freshman. And he's not shooting it well. He's not shooting it well from the free throw line. He's not shooting it well from the mid-range. He's not shooting it well from three. And quite honestly, outside of a couple games, he's been terrible defensively as well. So you got to look at it like Quentin Gooden's taking a step back. Then the final thing for me would be, I expected Najee Marshall to provide a little bit more offense. You look at last year, he shot about, 35% from three overall. On those catch-and-shoot threes from the wing in the corner, which he gets a lot of, he was probably shooting darn near 40% from three. This year, that number's probably less than 20%. He just has not been able to make a shot in a clean catch-and-shoot situation. And when you combine all three of those things, when you have very limited depth and a limited amount of talent to begin with, it creates a situation where you're going to be two or three games worse than personally I thought you would be.
Dan, what's the biggest reason this team has underperformed in your opinion?
I think there are two reasons, Rick. One kind of piggybacks on what Brian just said. Coming into the season, one of the things we talked about was, well, Xavier doesn't have much depth, and maybe they don't have a whole lot of proven quality. But they've got four dudes. I think that's the way Brian actually said it coming into the season. They got four dudes that anybody in the country would want in Tyreek, Najee, Paul, and Quentin. And the issue has been, from my perspective, that I'm not sure. Paul Scruggs, I think, has been a bright spot, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more later on in the show. But the other three guys, I'm not sure, have really lived up to the level of production that we had hoped they would give Xavier this season. The other issue, which I think has actually been better the last few games, was just the defense. Coming into the season, we all knew that with the loss of JP McCura, Sean O'Mara, Trayvon Blewett, Karen Canner, that Xavier was going to struggle to shoot the ball. And we knew that Xavier was going to struggle on offense. But there was a flip side of that coin, which is that those four key guys, all of them should be plus defenders. And you brought in, as Brian noted, Kyle Castlin, a guy that should be able to give you good defense off the wing. And I think we all thought that this team would be a better defensive team than most of, Chris Mack's Xavier teams were. And they have not lived up to that. Now, I will say, before somebody pulls out some stats and turns me into a corn cob, I will say they've been better in the three Big East games. Certainly, their defensive intensity, their defensive level of execution has been better. But I think that overall, when you look at the 16 games in total, that they have not lived up to the defensive expectations that we had for this team. So those are the two big things for me. An underperformance by the quote unquote star players, and just a general inability to defend the way that we thought they might be able to.
Yeah, I think you guys did a really good job of breaking that down. I think those are all kind of the key elements. For me, it would definitely be, if you want to call them the big three, Najee, Quentin, and Paul, those guys not being star-level players, to me, has been the biggest reason that this team hasn't lived up to the preseason expectations. I was a little more down on this team coming in than I think a lot of people were. I had said, I don't think they're making the tournament, or if they do, they'll be like the last team in as an, that last 11 seed playing in a play-in game, kind of like they were the year they went to Dayton and played against NC State. It felt like that type of team coming in. So I wasn't expecting a good Xavier team by any means, but those three guys not being able to get it going the way we expected has certainly put a different tenor on this season than it otherwise would have had. And I guess I'm kind of interested in why you guys think they haven't gotten it going. I think it's been a combination of a lot of things. And Brian said, Quentin Gooden hasn't played well. That's been obvious. He's definitely taken a step back. I would argue for most of the season, that's the same case with Najee Marshall. Not necessarily that he's taken a step back, but that he hasn't really made any progress from what he was last year, which was a guy that was able to give you a little bit of a spark off the bench.
Well, one thing that I think that we've seen over the years, if you follow Xavier, you follow college basketball as a whole, is that player development is not necessarily a straight line.
No.
Like there are dips, there are valleys and peaks as a player develops over the course of 4 years. And maybe Najee was put into a situation last year where he was set up to succeed. And I think what we're seeing is guys not being quite as equipped as we hoped they would be to step into bigger roles than they had previously. And I think that explains a great deal of the struggles that we've seen. And that's one of the frustrations as a fan watching the team, is that sometimes you can point to certain things and you can say, okay, if Travis Steele did X, Y, or Z, they would be better. But
you mean make adjustments?
Yeah, adjustments. There are no, what are the adjustments? So you put in some guys off the bench that haven't really demonstrated an ability to produce. So there's not really ways to tweak the lineup to change things up. Travis has shown a real, probably way more than Chris Mack, and a willingness to change up his defense and change their identity on defense to try and get something going. And it's worked for bits and pieces of the season, but it hasn't worked overall. And so what you kind of end up with is it's kind of like, this is what it is. And I made a joke on Twitter that the adjustment that Travis Steele needs to do is just yell, play better. And I don't know if there's anything more to that. It's like, make some shots. And for the main guys on the team to play better. I don't know if there's any secret formula here. And that's been the most frustrating thing from my perspective, is it's like, I don't know what else you can do.
Well, Dan just ran down basically the rest of the podcast, so I think we're done here. a lot of what you said is true, but sticking with sort of the big three and why those guys haven't performed or what's been the reason for them underperforming, and if there is upside going forward, Brian, what do you see? I think it's kind of a combination of the fact that, again, Quentin and Najee haven't been quite as good as we expected. Paul, I think, has. He's taken that step forward and really had a pretty nice season.
He's been terrific. He's been
the best player.
And I think we shouldn't, it's a bad season, right? And it's probably going to continue to be a bad season. But I don't think that should overshadow the fact that Paul Scruggs has been really good this year and is showing the level of potential that we thought he had coming into Xavier. And, we're going to talk about a lot of bad things, but I think it should be said from the outset that Paul Scruggs has been, for the most part, really good for this team so far this season.
But I think the other problem with these three guys, and of course the other guys around them, is that they don't fit well together. I mean, you have three guys who are kind of, their strengths are all the same. They're tough, they're athletic, they're not as skilled as you'd like them to be. They'd be a lot better with a star player who could shoot next to them. You know, like Najee Marshall looked better in an offense last year when he subbed in, and he was the most athletic guy amongst some skilled shooters and passers and high IQ offensive players. I think that helped Quentin Gooden's game last year as well. And Paul Scruggs would probably benefit from those same things. So I think it has as much to do with, like, it's not just Quentin Gooden and Najee Marshall aren't making shots. It's also, they don't have guys around them that makes this easier on them. And I think that's as much a part of it as anything.
Yeah. Personally, I think what we're learning is that Najee's a number two. He's a guy who can attack closeouts. He's a guy who can make some plays, you know, off the dribble. But if you got to ask him to be the guy, it's just not who he is, which is fine. Like, honestly, you could get to the NBA being a heck of a number two, but he's being asked to be a number one. And he's just not that. And the guy most equipped to be the number one, Quentin, hasn't been anything close to that. So they just don't have the one guy like that you can just give the ball to and say, like, score a basket for me. And I think Najee's trying to do too much, and it's taken away from what he does well to an extent. And I think that's kind of the biggest problem right now, is there's just no true bucket guy. Now, I will say I think some of that changes. I think, while he's not going to be their best player, let me make this clear, I do think Kiki Tandy's got the ability to get a bucket next year, even as a true freshman. That's really what he does at a high level. And I think that kind of takes – that's kind of going to help Najee and Paul and Q. Now, those four might never be on the court together, but for the ones that are on there with him, kind of takes some of that pressure off, some of that burden off. And I think you'll see them relax a little bit more and play better, because you're going to have other guys who are more equipped to score, whether it's Dami or Bishop or Kiki Tandy. But I just think it's those guys aren't ready to be the best player on the team. Quentin just doesn't have it in him right now, it seems. Najee, he could maybe as a senior, but right now he's just not ready to be that. I compare this a lot to Sean's first year at Xavier, where Justin Cage and Justin Dolman, everyone said, oh, those have to be their two best players. And they just weren't ready for it. Now, by the time those guys were seniors, Justin Dolman was probably the best power forward in college basketball at the end of the season. So you can continue to elevate, but some kids just aren't ready to be the best player as a sophomore. And I think that's the case with Najee Marshall right now.
Yeah, and I think when Najee was recruited, there were some comparisons made to, like, Derrick Brown. And I, at the time, thought he had potential to be better than Derrick, because I thought, one, he passed the ball really well in high school. And I thought his ball handling was developing enough to go along with that passing that he would be more of a guy who could create for you and elevate those guys around him and be more of a number one go-to type player on offense. But I think you're right, Brian. His lack of skill at this point, he just can't get where he needs to go with his dribble enough for him to be that type of player. And I think that was something Derrick Brown dealt with as well throughout his career. He's more of a slasher and scorer that if someone was there to set him up and he was able to play off of them, super, super effective. But right now, at this point in his career, just not ready to be the guy who creates things for an offense.
Yeah, heck, by the time Derrick was a senior, all he was catch and shoot 3-point shot.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he turned himself into basically a face up five by the time he was a senior. But with the team that he was surrounded by, that wasn't a bad look for him, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there's the comparison you made to Sean's first team. You know, there have been, I guess, three teams over the last 25, 30 years that you could call rebuilding teams for Xavier. This one feels different from those other teams because, you know, Skip's first team in the A-10, freshman-dominated team that just wasn't ready. But that team, you know, the amount of potential that was on that team was really exciting with Lenny and Gary Lumpkin and Darnell, obviously. And they played, you know, UMass into overtime at the Gardens, and they played UC really tough, two top five teams. It's a different deal, you know, because this team, they kind of are who they are. I mean,
Hold on. Dan. You keep saying this for this year, but then you're willing to go back and talk about those teams and how they had upside and continue to get better. Why do you think that Lenny Brown and Gary Lumpkin and Darnell Williams are better than Najee Marshall, Quentin Good, and Paul Scruggs, who are also developed?
I think this team's better than any of those previous teams.
I do, too.
I think that's probably true. The difference is that those previous teams, and even Sean's first team, where you had Stanley Burrell, you had some other – you had freshmen – who you could look at playing and you could say, okay, these guys have huge potential going forward. The guys that are on the team this year have been around. So it's
so
sort
your
of
cutoff
is like
point is after freshman year? That's silly.
Yeah, I mean
that's
like,
just totally
be,
silly.
Xavier's returning the four best players next.
You guys are putting words in my mouth.
Well, the words that are coming out of your mouth aren't making sense.
What I'm saying is that it's a different deal this year. Number one, because they don't have the backstop of the Atlantic 10.
Yes. Now that
I mean, the Atlantic 10 was a wonderful way to get those guys confidence and to get them reps and to get them and to demonstrate improvement over the course of the second half of the season. That does not exist for these guys.
Totally.
They're going to have to struggle through a completely arduous Big East, and I know the Big East is down. But while the Big East may be down on the top end, there is not an easy night in this league this year, as Seton Hall found out going to Chicago last weekend. So I do think there is a difference between some of those previous rebuilding, quote-unquote, Xavier teams and this year's team.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just disagree entirely with this notion that Xavier and Najee Marshall and Quentin Good and Paul Scruggs are what they are, and that, like, the only option for this team to get better in the future years is for freshmen to come in and be much better than those guys. I think those guys are going
to
be really
good
players still.
I'm trying to say, no, that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that if you're waiting for something to come out of nowhere and salvage this year's team,
gotcha.
You're out of your mind.
Yes.
What for this year's team to recover and win some games and to give people kind of the feeling that things are going on an upward arc, it's going to take improvement from guys that are already in the mix, that are starters, that are key players right now. And I'm not sure that that's the way it was previously, because you could look at guys who were playing their second or third game for Xavier and say, okay, these guys are definitely going to get better. These are guys that we know, right? I'm not saying they're not going to develop. I'm not saying they're not going to develop.
Yeah, I mean, but we're also talking about, like, Quentin Gooden is playing worse than he was at this time last year. Like, some of that's because the guys around him and the way the team fits together. I do think Quentin Gooden can all of a sudden flip a switch, or maybe things in his personal life aren't as good, or maybe he's been sick, or who knows. Like, guys aren't robots, and so sometimes just their personal life gets in the way or other things get in the way, and they do all of a sudden just kind of flip a switch and start playing better. We've seen that time and time again, so I do think there is still upside for these guys in this year's team,
right.
But your point is well taken. That
the improvement is going to come from guys that we know.
Right.
There is nothing coming out of left field that's going to there. There's not like a Darnell Williams or something like that all of a sudden you're going to see in conference play, and you're going to be like, oh boy, oh wow. You know, Keontae Kennedy isn't coming out of nowhere to start scoring 15 points a game, right? So really what this team is going to have to hang its hat on is improvement from the guys who are quote unquote known quantities. That's all I'm saying.
I think that's fair. There have been all types of suggestions made, obviously, on the message boards and the Twitters.coms and whatever else. Is there a change either of you would like to see, whether that be personnel-wise or X and O-wise, where you think, like, okay, I don't know that there's a lot that can be done, but I would definitely try this at least.
I would start Keontae Kennedy over Kyle Castlin. Not that I think Keontae's fantastic, because I don't, but what do you have to lose?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Ryan Welich has taken a lot of those minutes anyways. Castlin has only played, I think, about 10 minutes on average the last three games. Welich has been playing up around 30. So he's gotten some of those minutes. Keontae has gotten a few of those minutes more recently, and even Elias checked in the last game. And I agree with you. What do you have to lose? At least try to see if Keyonte can improve, I guess, as a freshman. Dan, is there anything you'd like to see them try?
Honestly, I'm not seeing it, Rick. I agree with Snow. I mean, I think that of the younger guys that haven't gotten a lot of playing time, by which I mean Elias, Dontarius, and Keyonte, that Keyonte has shown the most when he's gotten playing time. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me to give him more playing time, at the expense of Castlin. But ultimately, for this team to succeed and for this team to play better, it's going to come down to the guys that are there elevating their games. I just don't that. And that's what I said earlier in the recording is there's not like some magic bullet here. The guys that are there that are playing right now are going to have to play better and produce more and hit shots. And I mean, we all know, this is not a great shooting team, but you know, if they shoot 4 for 14 instead of 1 for 14 against Marquette, maybe it's an interesting game, you know? So I don't know. I think one thing that you brought up earlier this year, the Skinny podcast was, does Xavier need to slow down and play more of a sort of a rock fight type style? And I think that's kind of what they did against DePaul in the second half of that game. And I think that's what they did to a certain extent against Marquette. At least while they were competitive in the intervals of that game where they were competitive. So maybe that's what it is. But the biggest frustration is that there isn't a silver bullet. It's any improvement that comes out of this team is going to have to come from guys playing in the same system they're playing in right now and just doing better. I mean, am I crazy? I mean, that's what I see.
No, and at this point, like, if you're looking for this team to go on a magical run and make the NCAA tournament, like, you're probably not going to be very happy watching this team. I think what you're looking for now as a Xavier fan is, okay, can Najee Marshall improve and start showing signs of being like a number one type guy going forward? What's the next step for Paul Scruggs? Where does he go from this year, which has so far been a pretty darn good year for him? Is Quentin going, does Quentin taking a step back this year mean he's not equipped to be more of a featured player in the offense and he has to go back to just trying to be a role player and a guy who only distributes, when I don't really think that's honestly his best strength? I think he can be a slasher and scorer, but he needs some players around him and some shooters around him to make that work. But again, I think those are the things you're looking for, like trying to figure out those types of things. Let's talk about Quentin for a second, because for the first time in the Marquette game, people have been wanting Travis Steele to bench players all season because they haven't been playing well. In the Marquette game, for the first time, he kind of did that with a starter in Quentin. He sat him out, only played 11 minutes in the first half, sat him out for 9 minutes, and in the second half, he only played another like 9 minutes for 20 for the game. To me, he's played this pretty well, him being Travis, and the fact that I thought earlier in the year, the mistakes that were made by guys like Quentin and Najee, for the most part, were mistakes where they were trying to force the issue because there aren't enough options, and they're trying to be aggressive, they're trying to be the guy. Yes, some of the shots were bad, yes, some of the turnovers were bad, but for the most part, they were doing that trying to do their best. They weren't trying to screw up, or they weren't just checking out completely. Yes, there was a play or two when they got down to Cincinnati, they got down to Missouri, where it seemed like they checked out and they gave up defensively or gave up on a loose ball, and you can argue that those are worth pulling a guy out for, whatever. But in the Marquette game, we saw Quentin really just seem totally detached, where he had a ball go right through his hands that was stolen. He had another ball go through his hands that was almost stolen the next possession, and then when it wasn't stolen, he turned around and threw it out of bounds between Najee Marshall's leg. What do you make of that whole situation? Where are things headed for Quentin from here? And do you kind of agree with how Travis Steele has done the handling of pulling guys from a game and putting them on the bench? Or do you think he should do more of that?
I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going to play like Quentin played, where he was so casual, you can't play a dude like that. I mean, Travis always says, like, he's not coaching effort and intensity. He's not going to coach that. And Quentin, quite honestly, looked like he didn't give a crap. Now, I know he did, But some of the plays, like to simply hand the ball to the other team because you can't catch a bounce pass going 3 miles an hour, that's inexcusable. It just is. And when inexcusable mistakes happen, you have to sit on the bench, especially when it's in the first half, and especially when the team, quite honestly, played pretty well without you out there. And if that doesn't motivate you to play better, that's on you.
Do you agree?
I don't think he was any more motivated to play better. So Quentin's got to get that figured out. Mistakes out of effort, mistakes out of trying too hard, that's one thing. Mistakes out of sheer carelessness, that's inexcusable. You can't have that.
Do you agree with me that Sunday's situation was different from some of the other ones where people have been clamoring for him to get pulled? That, like, in the other games he was making mistakes, but he was trying. Like, it wasn't like he wasn't trying.
Sunday Auburn, it looked like he just tried. He just threw the ball to the wrong team a couple times. He got sped up, whatever. He probably took a few bad shots, but he was trying. He wasn't just dropping the ball and handing it to the other team.
Right.
I mean, those are different types of mistakes.
Yeah, and I think you don't even have to go as far back as Auburn. I thought at the end of the Seton Hall game, he made a number of poor decisions down the stretch against Seton Hall. But you know what? The guy had to chase Miles Powell around the entire game. In addition to playing a key offensive role for the team. And there was definitely a difference in the Marquette game with some of the mistakes that were made. But, you know, I mean, I come back to this, and I've already said it twice, so I'll try to keep it brief this time. But it's kind of catch 22 for Travis because, who are you going to put in?
Yeah, there's nothing behind him. Like the thing is, people have wanted these three guys pulled all year when they make mistakes, and it's like, well, at a certain point, you really won't get the ball across half court. without them in there. So, like, you don't have other options that are going to be better. So that's why if there were some young guys on the bench who had some potential to where it's like, hey, let's see if we can get something going. Let's see if we can dangle the carrot over some of these guys and motivate them. Sure. But the problem is, if you were going to bench a guy like Quentin Gooden or Najee Marshall earlier in this year, when all these guys were in practice every day and they all saw Najee and Quentin are trying, they're out here working hard with us. They're trying to be leaders. And the young guys behind them, like Keontae Kenny, Elias Harden, have not proven anything and have not given the effort and practice to earn those minutes. Like, there's a reason they weren't playing. It was because of the everyday effort and practice and what they had done to that point. If you start pulling the leaders of your team at that point in the upperclassmen, you lose the locker room because they don't have respect for that decision based on what they've seen in practice and based on what's happened in the games to this point. I know fans get really frustrated when players make mistakes, but there's a lot more that goes into the decision for these minutes than just that.
At the end of the day, Travis is going to put the players out there that he feels give him the best chance to win. And early in the season, there was no chance that Keontae Kennedy gave you a better chance to win than even a poorly playing Quentin Gooden. But a inexcusably awful playing Quentin Gooden didn't give him the best chance to win against Marquette. So guess what? He benched him. It's pretty simple.
Well, and look, I think there is some merit to the idea that even if Quentin Gooden is more talented and better, or Najee Marshall or Paul Scruggs or whoever is better than the guy behind him, there is merit to sitting him down to motivate him and say, look, I need buy-in from you. I need you to play my way, not your way. I understand that. But to me, earlier in the year, those guys, yes, there is the occasional jump shot off the dribble that you didn't want them to take anymore. But again, I felt like that was coming as a result of Travis tells them to take the shots that the defense gives them. And sometimes that's all that's coming because there's no one else that can do anything. So again, I felt it was more of the construction of the roster that contributed to some of their mistakes than it was them just not showing up. And, you know, Sunday was a little bit different. So I think he's handled that about the best he could. I get why people have wanted more guys sitting on the bench, but I think there's a reason that hasn't happened until Sunday. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward.
Yeah, Brian, I mean,
go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, no, what I was just going to say is that one of the biggest frustrations for me watching, especially the last two games, is, I mean, they the way they defended against Marquette, when you look at the points per possession, the way that they played against Seton Hall, especially for the first 29 minutes of the game, but also on defense for portions of the last 10 minutes of the game, I mean, they had those two teams set up to be beaten, and that was not a given thing. That was going to take some circumstances to put them in a position to win those games. And obviously against Marquette, you know, they played reasonably well defensively, I thought, but they were so bad offensively, they never had a chance. And then Seton Hall, they put themselves in a position where they had a chance to win, and they fell apart down the stretch. And that is the biggest frustration for me, is it's like, if you told me that Xavier was going to lose at Marquette, I would have said, yeah, that makes sense, because I think it's maybe the toughest game on the schedule altogether this year. If you told me that they were going to lose at home to Seton Hall, okay, because I've seen Seton Hall win at Rupp Arena. I mean, they're a
neutral,
damn good
but
team.
Yes.
Was it neutral? Okay.
Yeah, they
had those teams. They did certain things to put themselves in a position to win those two games. And it's like whack-a-mole with this team. You guys remember, or are you guys too young to remember the whack-a-mole game?
You pop one
arcade?
And it comes up somewhere else. Yeah, the issues just keep popping up. It's a different problem every game.
Exactly. It's not like there's one specific thing you can point to, because one night they play great on defense and they can't hit a shot. The next night they play really well on offense, but then everybody gets tired and they make a bunch of stupid turnovers and can't defend in transition and give up 30 some points in the last 10 minutes of the game. I mean, it's a different thing each night when they play competent teams. It's a sign of a team that's not very good, obviously. But it makes it difficult to try to sit here on a really highly rated podcast to diagnose what exactly is the problem, because it's a different problem seemingly every night.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head that there's different problems every night, because a lot of them are dictated by the other team being better than you. You know, when the other teams, like when Seton Hall turned it on in those last 10 minutes, I was expecting to go back, watch that tape, and see Xavier just completely melt down. I'll be honest, I didn't see that. Like, I saw Xavier incapable of making certain plays, and Seton Hall made plays. And then, yeah, you factor in a mistake or two as the thing starts to snowball, for sure. But I do think, like, this team has gotten better, without question. Like, they are a much better team on January 8th than they were on November 8th. But you still have shortcomings that are ending up in losses, you know, and you're not beating some of the better teams in the Big East for that reason. So it's going to be a frustrating year.
They're better than they were 2 months ago, but they're still not good enough to put a 40-minute effort together against a good team.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, look, if they go to Marquette, they caught Marquette on kind of a bad night for Marquette, or a bad afternoon for Marquette. If Quentin Gooden plays well, and you have an average game shooting the ball, like you said, a 4-for-14 or 5-for-14 night instead of a 1-for-14, you're right in that game, and you can probably win it because your defense was good enough to play with Marquette, and your talent was good enough to match their athleticism and size and talent and all that. They're not overwhelmed by these teams by any stretch. Problem is, again, it's just kind of a poorly constructed roster with guys who haven't been playing to their potential as well. So I think we've kind of talked about most of the stuff with, like, the current personnel and what's going wrong. Let me get your take on one last thing here, and that's the big men, because there's been kind of some recent talk. People seem down on Tyreek Jones after the last few games. Zach Hankins has played more. He started starting after Tyreek sat out for the Detroit game because of the head injury. Brian, what's kind of your take on the two bigs right now as things stand? Have they kind of been what you expected? Do you think one of them needs to pick it up a little bit? Where are you at on them?
I think they've been good overall. I don't think the problem with this team has been the bigs. That said, in Big East play, I think Tyreek's averaging like 3 rebounds a game. That can't happen. I mean, it just can't happen.
And part of that, of course, is because he barely played against Seton Hall, because Hankins caught fire and he was in foul trouble.
And they played it, Rick, tell me if I'm wrong, but haven't they played a lot more 2-3 in Big East play than they did in non-conference?
I don't know if I'd say a lot more. They've played certainly some 2-3 throughout stretches. What is your point there? Just that rebounds are tougher to come by in the 2-3?
Yeah, just because rebounds get distributed a little bit differently.
Yeah.
When you
But I would say defense. In a 2-3, the big man's always near the rim no matter what. So.
But also, Najee Marshall has been getting a lot of rebounds, defensive rebounds. So I think that's been he's kind of vulturing some rebounds away from Tyreek as well.
So all I'm saying is, you know, end of the day, we can point to what we want. Like, you need to rebound more than 3 times a game if you're Tyreek Jones.
For sure.
Period. I mean, I don't think there's really much argument to that. But overall, I mean, you look at the production they've been giving as a whole, a per 40-minute situation, it's been probably, I would say, equal to what they got out of the 5 last year.
Yeah, I mean, Karim Kanter obviously just offered them so much more skill and scoring pop on the offensive end that would certainly be nice for this year's team. But in terms of like actual holding down the fort and playing the 5 spot, I agree. I don't think there's much difference, and I certainly don't think they need another big man.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, like I keep seeing that idea that the big issue for this year's team is that they only have 2 bigs. I just don't understand that at all. Like,
what, did they need a third one to sit on the bench? Like,
yeah, I thought last year's was very difficult, especially because all 3 were playing pretty well at different times. It's like Sean O'Mara couldn't get in the game sometimes as a senior who was having a good year. Or Tyreek couldn't play at times, you know?
And the year before, it was the grad transfer, or the transfer, what's his name, Rashid Gaston.
Right.
At the end of the season, Rashid Gaston couldn't get in the game because it was Sean and Tyreek.
Right. And I think when you diagnose what the problems are with this team, the 5 is not the problem.
No, not even close to it. All right, guys, just taking a quick look maybe at the Big East here before we get off the line. That it's been a kind of an interesting year. You kind of already mentioned it, Dan. There isn't a dominant team. Villanova, I think, is probably the best team in the conference. Although St. John's may have something to say about that.
Well. As we record this, Nova's come back from down double digits and looks like they're going to beat St. John's at home pretty impressively. So, yeah, I think Villanova probably the best team in the league. Well, I mean, you have to throw Marquette in there. I mean, I know you have the Wojo factor, but, I mean, I think those are the 2 best teams.
I would probably take St. John's and Villanova. I would take Marquette third. Probably Seton Hall 4th. I think those are going to be 4 tournament teams, basically guaranteed. I don't want to say guaranteed, but
I mean,
most likely those 4 are going to be in the tournament. And then you can see it going a lot of different ways. I mean, after that, I mean, Georgetown beats the brakes off of Butler, but Butler has some good wins. You know, Providence, I feel they've got to play better sooner or later. I just think they're too talented, and Ed Cooley's too good of a coach for it not to happen.
I don't understand them at all.
Yeah, they're the biggest shock to me in the conference.
I genuinely think any team in the Big East can beat any team anywhere. I know that's going to sound ridiculous, like, oh, you think DePaul can go to Villanova and win? Well, they almost did.
Yeah.
Like, I legitimately... If Xavier went to St. John's and won, I would be surprised, but I wouldn't say, wow, that's the shock of the century.
You know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Xavier's going
to... It's just the way it is this year in the Big East.
Xavier's finally going to go to Villanova. Creighton's solid,
but, you know, they're up and down. They get blasted by Butler.
Dominated by Butler. Just crushed.
Yeah, so...
Yeah,
and here's the thing, if people want
to... Rick was about to make a ridiculous claim, and I want him to get to say it.
Yeah, the funny thing is, this is going to be the year that Xavier goes to Villanova and win in the midst of like a 5 or 6 win Big East slate. they'll waste the win at Villanova this year, and fans will lose their minds.
But by the way, if anyone wants to look at this, though, you start looking at what the Big East is next year.
Oh.
Whoa.
Holy cow. I mean, the thing is, this year, because some of the other conferences are down as well, the Big East is really in fine shape. I mean, they could still get 6 teams in the tournament.
Yeah,
better league year? This year. Better league this year, the Pac-12 or the MAC?
The Pac-12, but I tell you what, the AAC might be right there with the Pac-12 this year.
I would take the AAC over the Pac-12. Certainly going to get more tournament bids.
I mean, it's really, really close between those two.
Like, Houston and Cincinnati are getting in from the AAC.
Yeah.
You can't even point to one school in the Pac-12 and say they're getting in.
that's incredible, but you're not wrong. I mean, The Pac-12 is...
I mean, it's not just basketball either.
If you're Billy Donovan, do you honestly consider... I mean, I know the money is probably just not going to be there.
No,
do you consider UCLA at all?
No.
But that UCLA job has to be enticing for the fact that the Pac-12 is so bad right now, right?
Rick, as it was put to me, yes, coaching Russell Westbrook can be tough because he's moody, but you don't have to deal with Russell Westbrook's mother.
You know, like, I understand Billy Donovan, plus, like, what, $7 million or something? I mean, they're not going to be able to match his money. So his situation,
I mean,
totally understand that's far-fetched. But don't you think...
If UCLA is looking for a coach that's made multiple Final Fours, I mean, the guy at Mississippi State's a pretty good coach.
But don't you think that will be an attractive job just because of how bad the Pac-12 is right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's an attractive job because it's a great job.
Well,
but...
of course, but even more, like, I would think this year's UCLA job has the chance to attract a bigger name than it might otherwise. Because I do think that job has become a little overrated based off of its, you know, its prestige and its past success. But this year, just because of how easily you could dominate that conference going forward, I would be very interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, UCLA just needs to get out of the Stone Ages.
They ran Ben Howland off because they didn't like his style of play, and look what happened. I mean,
well, here,
unbelievable.
I hear Mick Cronin might be on their hot board, so.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know if that's the best personality fit.
I really can't think of a worse one.
So.
Can you imagine, hey, coach at UCLA, have you registered for pre-check yet so you can sit in 3C as we're flying southwest to Phoenix for the game?
Yeah,
well,
that's
pretty
crazy.
Mick Cronin may make sense because they need somebody that can sit in that middle seat.
Well, and he's used to not chartering flights, so.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they don't charter at UCLA is
bananas.
It's incomprehensible.
It's preposterous. I don't even understand. Like, some of the stuff, I think you, Snow, you made some of those points on Twitter after talking about what a difficult job it was anywhere in the Pac-12. And it's like, I mean, are you guys serious? Why are you paying $7 million a year, whatever it is, for your San Francisco corporate office and your teams can't fly charter? It's amazing to me, but whatever.
All right.
Can't pay the players, Rick. Can't pay the players. Larry Scott's got to get his.
Let's wrap this deal up with a little recruiting mention here. Brian, you've been around a lot. You've been out at some events. Travis Steele has also been at. And one of the interesting things you wrote recently was an update on Harland Beverly's recruitment. All of a sudden, it seems like Harlan and Xavier are treating this situation like nothing ever changed, and Xavier's been in the thick of things this whole time. Is that kind of an accurate assessment? Are they right back in the mix here?
Yeah, I mean, Harland and Travis has such a soft spot in his heart for Harland that I don't think he ever stopped talking to him. And while an assistant coach might have been told, all right, we're not recruiting him anymore or something like that, you know, the head coach just kind of decided, like, that's my guy.
Well, and he has such a tight relationship with his AAU staff, too.
Yeah, you know, I still don't think Harland's the best fit. I really don't. Like, what he does well isn't really necessarily what they need. And personally, even though Harlan's probably more of a two guard than a point guard at this point, he's kind of listed as a point guard. He has point guard dreams. I wouldn't mess with DeJuan Odom in any way to get Harland Beverly. I just wouldn't. But at the same time, you know, Xavier needs good players, so they're going to continue to recruit him, and they want to add one more high school kid. And Harlan's as good as there is right now, so they're recruiting him. I don't know that they can get him. I just don't know, but it's going to be interesting to monitor going forward.
Well, and you mentioned they want to add another high school guy. There was some consternation on the message board about taking six high school players in a class, and it meaning for trouble down the road. To me, it's like,
why?
Yeah, to me, it's like, guys don't make it.
Let me make it clear. I don't think the staff would like to take six.
Not usually.
I think they need to.
Yes, yes. When you're in a year like this, or like when Chris Mack was in 2014, where you're like, look, we need at least three guys to pan out. Like, we can't, you're going to swing and miss on guys, or they're going to leave, or whatever else. You have to stockpile talent. when you're in a rebuild situation like this. So to me, I think, especially when, I mean, you can say there's six guys, but let's be clear, Deontay Miles is a bit of a long shot. I know he has a lot of talent outside, but he is a project, and he is a guy that the first year you really can't depend on for anything. So you're kind of already factoring him as a contributor later down the line as it is. So yeah. I don't think there's any issue with adding another high school guy in this current situation.
Snow, you were covering recruiting at that time for Xavier. Wasn't Tu Holloway the last player in his class?
Yes, and it caused some not so great feelings with a couple of other guys in the class, namely Walsh, Bryan. But
take the trade, you know?
Yeah.
It's a trade you got to make.
I mean, it is what it is. At the end of the day, can you imagine the problem Xavier would have had at the point guard position if Brad Redford was the backup?
Right.
No disrespect to my man B-Rad, but that ain't going to be pretty, especially when Cheeks and all his Cheeksness would be the starter. But, yeah, they added, now I guess technically he was added late. He probably committed around January, if I had to guess, but they added Tu Holloway in April.
Right. So, I mean, there's still an opportunity here. And I think, I don't think looking at the roster the way it is right now and looking at the guys that are under, obviously you've got some guys that you factor in for next season and possibly the following season, but there are a lot of openings there. And Rick, you and I were texting the other day, not to brag, but about the fact that there's going to be a lot of spots in the rotation that are going to be up for grabs next summer. It's going to be really interesting because you've got, I mean, if Elias Harden and Keontae Kennedy want to make a go of it after this year at Xavier, they're going to be fighting with some guys coming in. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say. I think Travis Steele wants to add one more high school kid. I think he would like to add a traditional sit-out transfer, and I think he would like to add a grad transfer. Now, you can run those numbers and figure out that that means no one thinks everyone's coming back next year. I don't – there's anyone with half a brain can point to the potential for three kids to transfer. I don't think all three would, but it doesn't take – you know, a real rocket scientist to figure out which three would be the obvious transfer candidates. And let's be honest, that happens in college basketball now. Kids transfer. So I think you're going to see major roster turnover this offseason.
I'm in Detroit right now. Should I drive up to Rochester and put a bug in Greg Campy's ear about the big man?
I don't know. I think they might need that little Braden White kid that shoots it off their bench more than the Xavier Hill Mays. All right.
I have a question. I would like to ask Snow this because I heard Mo Egger say this the other day, and I just want to get his response. So Mo Egger said that he talked to somebody inside the Bengals organization who said, quote, well, paraphrasing, but quote, that if it wasn't for fan backlash, Hugh would have been hired already.
I mean, obviously, I have no way of knowing that's true or not, but it certainly passes the smell test.
I can't believe they cared enough about what the fans thought to nix that idea.
Well, I think the reason Marvin got fired is because of the fans.
Just because of people not showing up?
Yeah, and just the general apathy. You know, general indifference is about the worst thing for a professional sports team. And I think a lot of that was tied to Marvin,
right
or wrong.
But it's just crazy that they didn't sense that last year when they signed him to a 2-year contract.
Well, they're a little bit slow on the uptake.
Yeah. Right?
Fair enough. All right. Well, you guys got anything else?
Well, no, I do want to ask. I want to ask Brian Snow who he thinks should be. If it was Brian Snow making the decision, who would be the Bengals coach next year?
Eric Bieniemy intrigues me. I don't know though. My whole thing is, I don't really care who it is. I care what that person stands for. And I'm not Doug Gray. That doesn't mean I care what their religious beliefs are or how good of a person they are. I couldn't give a crap about that. To me, it's if you got 4th-and-2 at the +40 yard line. Are you punting? If the answer is yes, I don't want you.
Yep.
If you got fourth and inches at your own 45, are you punting? If the answer is yes, I don't want you. I want someone who's going to be forward thinking, use analytics, and not be standard football coach guy.
Sounds good to me.
So I like the Colts defensive coordinator. I think I'm in on him, Eberflus or whatever his name is.
I know this. He's worked miracle with the Colts defense. But one thing I always find interesting, and I think this is kind of unique to football more so than basketball, like the skills that it takes to be a good coordinator aren't necessarily transferable to being a good head coach. It's just a completely different situation.
Do you think there's a parallel to basketball in that way at all,
no,
Ryan?
No, I really don't.
Do you think?
Because so much basketball, it's everything's like in football, it's the schematics of your defense. Like as a head coach in general, that doesn't matter. You're managing people, you're managing egos, you're trying to build a philosophy. Assistant coaches in basketball have a lot more to do with that. Even though so-and-so could run the defense or run the offense, they're still involved with position groups on both ends. I don't think it's similar in that way at all, to be honest with you.
Rick?
Yeah?
You seen any ghosts recently?
You've been listening to another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For the legend, Brian Snow, and Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.